Think you gotta get closer, Chris, maybe somebody else, you need to get halfway across the road. You did it.
Yeah, I wondered why they put the controller.
So people don't steal it. Try to put it in a place that no one can take.
We're in session. Okay. Charge seasonal discount rates.
Well, commissioners, as you know, you approved a yard discount last year for 35 cents a foot for both staying in the yard on a monthly basis for the prepaid position. In some ways, that promotion was very successful, and you'll see the data here that we've almost hauled, or we've almost had twice as many boats in the yard as we had previously. However, there's a different side to that story too that I wanted to share with you. So TJ has put together this spreadsheet, and I'd like to walk with you through.
Can you read it from here?
I think staff's position is that discounts are important, discounts really drive business, but we want to look at the actual income what we're looking at. One of the things that the Marine Trade Study didn't do, which was a very comprehensive study, was they didn't include utilities. So when we look
at the yard rate study?
Right. Yeah. So we didn't look at how much electricity people use. And especially in the wintertime when this rate's in effect, the people tend to plug in heaters, people tend to do other things because the power's free, so why not? So if you look at these numbers, what this spreadsheet does is it shows you September of 17 versus September of 18, goes down month by month, for what we made on storage. The next column is what we made on hoist. The next is electricity, and the next is garbage. You see, garbage is pretty much a wash. We didn't spend any more or any less with this promotion, so we brought that out. Hoist is very close. We actually made a little less on hoist than you would think, because smaller boats hauled out instead of bigger boats. We charge by the foot. So when you look at the bottom line, it's about $3,500 less in 18 than we made in 17. During this promotional period. Storage costs obviously are down $13,000, so it's $13,000 less. We've got to remember 17 was not a banner year. So when we're comparing it, it's not like 17 was one of the best years we ever had. But where we really see is we've spent over $10,000 more on electricity than we did in 17. So all in all, you're seeing a total here of about $27,000 less in 2018 than in 17 during this promotional period.
So is this electricity specifically in the yard? Can we meter that? Are we metering it closely enough to know?
This is specifically in the yard, yes, we are metering that closely. But we meter it as a whole area,
yeah.
Not as individuals. But if you look at occupancy, the average occupancy during this promotional period was 82 boats in the yard versus 50 boats in the yard the year prior. So we hauled 40% more boats, or we had 40% more boats in the yard. And that's one of the issues we want to talk about. I talked about it briefly in the Marine Trades meeting the other night. What happens is we have a lot of boats in the yard that have been in the yard for quite some time. So all of a sudden, if I have my boat in the yard for a year and I'm doing a restoration, come September 1, my rates go cut in half automatically. So we're giving that discount to long-term projects in the yard. So it's not only a promotion for new business, it's also old business. And when you look at haulouts, the number of haulouts, they're not that different from 17 to 18. 385 versus 400 in New York, but yet our revenues are down. So I guess the questions we have before us, and again, we're not making decisions today, but we'd like some direction so we can further flush this out, is staff believes there should be a discount, but should that discount be and how can we incorporate utilities in this? Some ports, if you look at that marine trade study, like I said, it's silent to electricity. Some ports charge a monthly fee for electricity, up to $50 a month. Some people charge $50 a month for electricity. I talked to Chris at Sea Marine, they charge $15 a month for electricity. We charge nothing. Some ports charge $5 a day. So every day you pay $5, which is a big bill. It's $150 a month for electricity. What that offers, though, is a choice to the boat owner that you don't have to plug in, but if you do plug in, you're going to have to pay. So I think one of it is to determine what that discount will be. We believe 35 cents is a little low. And looking at the study, I wasn't around when they did this study, but the 35 cents was kind of a hit off from Port of Everett that did a 35 cent deal. As soon as they did that, the next month they realized that was too low and they raised it to 50 cents. And they're staying at 50 cents this year.
So it's
wait a minute, the discount was 35 cents and they went to 50 cent discount?
No, 50 cents, from 35 cents a foot to 50 cents a foot. So they raised it 15 cents.
And our regular rate is 60. So we gave almost 50% off.
I got it.
And we don't have any breakout about how much of this is new versus how much of this is haul outs.
We don't. And that's one of the figures I'm going to need TJ to get for me. So how many of these discounts were given to boats that are long-term active projects versus new boats that were hauled?
And we don't really have a number of how many boats are in storage. We should have that in the lease or the.
We do in the report that you get
monthly.
Yeah. So we could probably figure that out. But that's a number we're going to have to get for.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out, I mean, if it's a $10,000 difference, or if it's $33,000 for electricity and there's, you know, how many boats for a, you know, whatever the period of time is, you know, what the electric surcharge rate should be and how much of that should be, or what the electric cost is, how much of that should be included in the storage cost. How much of that should be a surcharge? I don't know.
We can just anecdotally know that we have about 82 boats in the yard. So we can take 82 boats in the yard and divide it by the $35,000 or whatever, $32,000, and get a number that's going to give us about what people use.
Yeah.
But again, there are a lot of boats in the yard that don't plug in.
I mean, there's not a plug-in per spot, right? Because the spots are kind of...
There is. Well, remember, there's a fourplex every other spot.
Okay.
So extension cords go all over the place. And that's when it makes it difficult to monitor and meter because people plug in the fourplexes, so we have to figure it out. So Chris is looking at possibly a plug-in meter, where the only way you can plug in is to go through a meter that we can read. So we're looking at options, but we don't have those options. And I think from an administration point of view right now, just charging the flat rate, some flat rate. Abigail and I talked about if we do a daily rate, it makes it tough because people will want credit when they don't plug in. So we're going to have to monitor 82 boats every day to see who's plugged in, who's not plugged in. Weekend, we don't have people here. It would be easier to establish a rate that would be a monthly rate.
Then you have to do the, you know, boat A plugged in, boat B plugged in, boat A's extension cord still becomes the issue.
Well, this discount was always promoted to me to be a way to get increased revenue because we're getting more boats in. And I guess that I never really heard of it sold as any other thing like a way to increase marine trade business because more people ended up be using facilities and supplies and all that stuff. So really on its face of being a revenue generator for the port, it really failed. But I'm not sure if there are any ancillary benefits we don't have showing up in here, like increased marine trade activity or sales from the local areas or stuff like that. Is there any way we have of monitoring that or getting a handle on that?
I've asked the marine trades if they could let us know what kind of uptick in business they have from the small yard. This is just a small yard, it's not the shipyard.
Mm-hmm.
our staff seems to believe that a lot of these people were looking to store their boats over the winter in upland, and this was a good way to do it.
Oh, okay.
But we don't have, that's all anecdotal. So only the marine trades can give us details on, did we see an increase in business? And we've yet to get that yet.
And I would submit too that it really needs to be a win-win for the marine trades as well as the port. We can't afford, I mean, it's one of our most expensive departments because of the requirement to use the heavy equipment, the environmental issues. It's a very expensive department to run. So we can't afford to just support the marine trades and lose money. So, I mean, it needs to be a win-win really for both.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I am for using, you know, some incentives to stimulate, you know, behavior we want to stimulate, but I think the behavior that we're probably ultimately after is to bring boats here for the trades to work on, not to bring boats here to store.
Yeah.
So, I mean, somehow we need to create a mechanism. I'm open to suggestions about how to do that, but somehow we need to say, yeah, this is a discount. We're happy to have you have it, but the discount is really because you're bringing your boat here to work on, not because you're bringing your boat here to store.
Didn't we used to have something in effect where a marine trade could sponsor someone, like say that he's coming in, we were on his boat, so he has a discounted rate?
So we didn't have that in the yard.
It was in Moritz, wasn't it?
It was in Moritz. But we did. I mean, when Mike Golomikoff ran Golomikoff Marine, he used to do everything. He used to schedule the haul out. He used to pay for the haul out and charge the tenant. And that way, and during with that mechanism, it would be easy to give that discount.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not only about Golomikoff Marine, or it's not only about, you know, ACI. It's about, you know, somebody that does upholstery work, or somebody that sometimes five or six marine trades work on one boat. So it's really hard. It's not a one-stop shop. Well, that would be hard to enforce, but it is a benefit.
Maybe the discount could be after the fact, after it comes in and they've had a bunch of work done, they bring their receipts in and say, I had this and this and this and this shop work on my boat. I want the discount that you said I'd get for marine trades.
We've talked about that, and that's certainly a way we can go. I think one of the things that I agree with the whole marine trade study is the thing that brought people here, and the reason we have 82 boats in the yard this year, is because they saw that discount. It got them here before they got here. It was a loss leader, if you will, even, hey, I need to go to Port Townsend because I got a great deal going on. If there's a bunch of hoops they have to jump through to get that discount, I'm not sure that that would be an incentive enough to do it.
And then back end too, administratively, it makes it more difficult for the customer service reps, you know, to gather up all that, and, you know, they have to insist that they have the receipts, and that makes it hard with the communication, with the customer service satisfaction, you know, it's,
Well, that can also help with one of my pet peeves, and that's people saying, oh, you need a receipt for this?
But I mean, I don't want to make everybody's life complicated, but, you know, I don't want to give away $30,000 for people to bring boats to store here.
I asked TJ to run the numbers on what it would cost, provided we could still have 82 boats in the yard or somewhere around 80, what would it cost to neutralize that $26,000 deficit? He thought if the...
27.
He thought if we raise the rate to 45 cents, it's still an incentive from 60, and we could make that up. Now, that's dependent on the fact that at 45 cents, we could attract 80 boats in the yard. But it's a good compromise, and it makes it easy. You wouldn't have to do anything. It would get us back to 2017 numbers, which, like I said, weren't great, but at least it gets us back.
And maybe then, too, we wouldn't have to worry about dealing with the utilities at this point. We could see how it goes with, you know, still going the same way with the utilities, but getting an increase in the rate.
Yeah, well, you know, the utilities are going to be higher because it's wintertime and people have resistance heaters. So I think that a combination would be important. We'd have a rate and a utility fee. Mm-hmm. And which would give them an option to opt out, which would then be a good one because wouldn't be paying for it, so.
Okay.
So we're gonna go back and bring you more numbers. Obviously, this is the first touch at this. There is some urgency because we wanna actually start promoting this come August. So if we could bring back at the next meeting some more numbers for you to consider and put it on the agenda, maybe we could move forward with an August 1, start date for promotion for September 1.
Pam, can you reach out to the marine trades that work in the small boat yard and see if they can give you some estimate of, you know, what their business did in this period, in the discount period, and see if it, you know, if it over 2017 or, you know, what the effect was?
Yes.
Because that's the thing, that the number we don't have that would really be useful in making this decision. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, well. Citizens Advisory Board.
Well, commissioners, we've been talking about this and we're gonna probably continue talking about it for a while, but what we've done for you is gotten you the resolutions from the PUD. PUD has had multiple resolutions on their advisory committee to perfect it. They started in 2012 with their advisory committee, and they've had four resolutions to codify that committee over the last few years. We've got 12 and 16, and then we've got
18.
Yeah, then we've got 18 here.
The constituency of the membership.
So how they structure their committee, and again, we're comparing apples to oranges here because the PUD, everybody's a constituent in the PUD. Everybody has water or power or something. The port, that's not necessarily the case. We have a lot of people who we need to represent that aren't a marine trade, aren't a boat owner, aren't an airplane owner, that we need to also include in this. What the PUD does is each commissioner gets to pick three members. They have a 9-person board, and that makes up the core standing committee. Everything is driven by the commission through the general manager. So the commission says, I need information on X. The general manager then tasks a committee chair to do that one thing. So it's not a let them be free. It's a thing that's really directed by the commission for the committee to come back and report. Interestingly enough, in talking to Jeannie, she says that the CAB reports, but the resolution in 2018 actually says the CAB reports to the executive director who reports to the commission. So again, you can do it any way you want, but that's the way the PUD is structured right now.
So how often do they?
They meet monthly.
Monthly?
They meet monthly. Your staff believes that there's a value to this, definitely. We worry about monthly meetings from a bandwidth point of view. I mean, this is your executive staff, and we really can't take on another monthly meeting to do agendas and minutes and recordings and everything else. So what the PUD has done is they found hiring Don McDaniels was the best way to do it. And you might know Don, he was a former PSE executive. And he runs their advisory committee as a consultant.
How much does that cost? No?
I don't know. I couldn't get to Kevin Street. I got to Bill Graham. Bill didn't know.
So if we hired
John Collins.
John Collins.
Yeah.
I haven't heard back from him yet. I'm not sure. I had coffee with him a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about life and things, but
I mean, I don't think it's a lot of money. I mean, even if we budgeted $10,000 total for the year, probably would be fine to get a consultant that would really be able to work with the committee to do that. My big concern is what happens in March when there's nothing to talk about.
It's a short meeting.
Well, yeah, it's important to have scheduled meetings, but I really worry that there's not going to be enough work for them to do on a monthly basis.
We can find something for them to do. So, but, you know, I'm really, the couple of times that I've been on PUD cab and cab groups, there's been a commissioner there, and I think that's a really valuable thing. And, you know, the commission assignment list is now 3 pages long, something like that.
Commission assignment, you mean committee list for each commission?
Committee list, yeah, I mean, well, we don't all take those, some of them are, you know, director takes them, or some staff member takes them, but, you know, commissioners sign up for a fair number of those things. I think this is at least as important as any of those things that we sign up for, and if I'm gonna spend a couple hours a month, you know, there's, I need to just add it into my calendar, or say, well, I have to do one less thing, and make this the thing that I do do. Whoever the commissioner is that takes that on every year, I think that having a commissioner there is a really critical aspect. Not that the commissioner is there to influence the outcome of the committee, but the commissioner is there to make sure that the sense of the board is carried through all the way back to the commission.
I would think it might be useful for the commissioners to rotate through that, mm-hmm. so you don't have one assigned and then yeah. the others left out. I think that's a way to do that. So then you'd be a third of the meetings. But
yeah,
I'm still weighing the standing committee versus ad hoc committees. That you've been seeing the stuff that Liz and Pam have been sending us, and it's like I said, we got to really ask ourselves what we want. I keep hearing the fact that we're not transparent for everybody. I mean, you can work and work and work and work to be transparent. Somebody's always going to think you're not transparent.
We're never going to be transparent enough that if they can't find the website to look up the information, you know, we're never going to take every hand of every citizen in Jefferson County and lead them to the website.
So with that said, I think that I'm not sure that having a standing committee, which with all its attendant, you know, expenses and staff time and so forth, is going to really push the goal forward to the ultimate transparency that everyone thinks is going to happen. And so I'm not so sure that just ad hoc committees aren't the way to go. That's why I think it should be a lot less onerous for the staff, wouldn't it?
Well, we believe strongly that ad hoc committees are important. They work really well with leasing. Mm-hmm. They work really well with parking. And it allows the commission to get a different perspective than just these 9 citizens.
Mm-hmm. And I would just offer that even with a consultant providing administrative support to the committee, there would still be a need for staff to provide probably information assistance and to attend the meetings as well. So having administrative support certainly helps, goes a long way, but it would still create demands on time.
Everything does.
Yep.
Except ad hoc committees might not necessarily meet all year.
Right.
So okay. That would be that.
Yeah, that was really in reference to my comments in reference to the standing.
Mm-hmm. And it could be a hybrid. You know, we could have a standing committee that's an ad hoc committee.
I mean, the reason that we don't have an advisory board now is because the board we had evaporated, and it probably evaporated long before their terms ran out.
Yeah, just to clarify, I think there really has been a bit of misunderstanding about that. The no assignments after the 2015 report, I think, was in like early 2015 was forwarded to the commission. There was no effort on the part of staff or the commission to call another meeting of the advisory committee. And again, because both the administrative and the professional support to the committee was the responsibility of staff at the direction of the commission, because there was no real push to call another one after that initial report, it sort of slipped away.
Because
but it's not as though the issues in 14 and 15 were really about getting a quorum for a committee that was not meeting on a regularized basis. And you know, not completely unexpected given that this was a brand new committee, and the way it was set up was to meet at least once a year to do this specific charge as directed in the resolution, and then could meet on an ad hoc basis when issues arose as directed by the commission. So it was sort of a hybrid already, in that it had a standing purpose, but it also had the ability to be called.
So it had a standing committee with an annual meeting schedule.
Right.
I think that it would be, I think, useful to have a regular business item on the agenda for the commission meeting to review and make assignments to the Citizens Advisory Board. If you did that once a month, it would remind everybody that they're out there. It would prompt staff and the commission to find useful information and useful tasks for a committee to do, so that they didn't feel like they were coming to a meeting that, you know, they was just a car ride to town and back. In my life, if I have a dentist appointment or an eye doctor appointment or any appointment that's irregular and way the hell out in the future, it just gets lost. And you know, the day before the appointment, when I get a call from the dentist, is like the first time I know it's coming up, because it's just off my radar.
Pete, we're in the meeting right now. Welcome.
Hello.
Hiya.
So we're talking about committees and advisory committees, and we can back up a little bit and let you know that we're discussing a standing committee versus a ad hoc committees.
One thing that Eric brought up is that we're all very painfully aware of the last committee we had that didn't work out well, and we're talking about the reasons for that. And I'm thinking that Eric just suggested that some of the reason that it evaporated is because it wasn't tasked with anything from the commission through the staff to them, and I think that may be because it was not working that well. So I don't know. I'm sort of on the fence about a standing committee versus an ad hoc committee, but I keep going back to this old movie I saw the other night where the detective says, "All right, round up all the usual suspects," and I'm thinking that that might better serve us if we have a batch of usual suspects that would be willing to serve on an ad hoc basis, and we can go ahead and not have the burden on staff and on the members, you know, of a monthly meeting when there may or may not be something useful to talk about. Just have a group of people that would be willing to serve on this and have knowledge and interest. And then what we really kind of need to do is step back and figure out what we want this to accomplish. For example, one of the first things I think that would be useful to accomplish would be the comprehensive scheme update and then a strategic plan update. And we got a few things that would be useful to go through and prioritize those to figure out how much actual work we have for a committee and which ones need to be done first. These rates that we just discussed, the storage rates, that might be a useful topic. But I'm tending to think that I really, really don't want to replicate the problem we had in the past. And I'm thinking that an ad hoc committee has so far worked well. And the one experience we had with the standing committee really didn't that well. But
I'm thinking about our current unpleasantness with the IDD. And the fact that it's not so much the people that are sit in this room every, you know, twice a month that are confused about what the court is doing and why the court needs more money to do it. The other 28,570 people in the county that are confused, and unless we have the constituency of the PUD cab and the constituency, I know Liz Honig has shared her experience with the citizens committees in you know other venues, but they've been more broadly cast. And I think if we get to the point where we're have a citizen advisory board of the people that are just in this room every couple of weeks, that we don't really increase our citizen input. I mean, we take input every commission meeting from people from the floor. Granted, we don't generally ask them to go in and do a research project for us, but in terms of just being open, being inclusive, being, you know, those sorts of things, I think the constituency of this board is important, and I think that the ad hoc kind of committees we create tend to be very specialized groups that come out of our existing stakeholders and really don't bring in a broader public perspective.
Well, that's why I think having a list of the usual suspects would be including the regular, you know, District 3 folks, 2 folks, and the people that aren't a stakeholder, you know, someone that's representing the community at large that is wondering, where's my 40 cents or my 19 cents?
If you have those people, so I pick a grocer and a plumber and a carpenter from District 2. You know, what projects do we give them? One thing is to have a citizen advisory board come together and discuss, you know, court policy and give advice on, you know, how they see those things happening. And the other thing is this very specialized thing like do a yard rate study, do a mortgage study, do a study that is very, very marine or aviation or some user group focus that you have specialists from. So where's the plumber, the carpenter, and the whatever the other guys?
Well, remember, our leasing committee did that, though. I mean, we had a realtor, we had a financial person, so we went outside the box of the usual suspects.
We did, but again, those are very specialized sorts of people, and if you're trying to get a representative cross-section of the population.
Well, I think a good example.
Can I jump in real quick?
Sure.
So, I emailed Jim. Did you talk about what I emailed you at all, Jim?
No.
So, I kind of was thinking of Chris Brignoli. Is he there today?
No.
You can talk about it.
I was kind of thinking of Chris's comments last workshop about, the concern, or maybe it was a couple workshops ago, like with, I made the comment, well, let's just keep the leasing committee going with other tasks. And he made the comment of, well, if parking was the next task, for example, the leasing committee may not have the right tools to understand what the dynamics are for the parking issue relating to the port. And so kind of going on with that, I thought, why not, you know, because it seemed like Susan and Ernie Baird and Pete Langley, and it seemed like there was a good, was there ready to go, and then as they had different tasks that came before them, they could bring in maybe some port-specific people that were related to a task. And so you would kind of have a little bit of both, I guess, is what I was shooting.
And that was kind of my thought about having a standing committee, was that you would have a standing committee of however many people you had, and those people would understand, you know, what the role of the advisory board was, what the processes for getting information for staff was, you know, what the requirements for operating the board from the bylaws and that kind of thing was. And then someone on that, one or more people from that standing committee would then, if there was a parking, if you needed a parking study done, would bring in people that, you know, maybe had people that had slips in Point Hudson, people that had slips in Boat Haven, you know, those other people, to create an ad hoc committee that would be adjunct to the standing committee, but have a core person or two in it.
Yeah.
So that we wouldn't have to like retrain them and remind them of, oh, this is a requirement for operating this.
Who picks those?
Is Eric there?
Yes.
Hey, Eric. So and Steve, you remember this too, the rate study that actually Chris Brignoli was on, remember, that was an ad hoc committee that put together that rate study. And you know, again, kind of like the leasing experience, that was a really good experience for the port. It provided a way for the constituents affected by the rates to really have an effect on what we're talking about, to educate us in staff and commission about what was relevant in terms of rate comparisons. And I thought that was a really positive experience. Was that yours, Eric, too?
I didn't participate very much in the work of that committee at all, and was sort of an interested bystander. What I will tell you is that it wasn't a committee that met with staff and was providing essentially input to staff that was then forwarded to the commission. So it was a bit different than a standing committee or even an ad hoc appointed committee of the commission. But I do agree that it worked well.
Yep.
One of the things that before you came online, Pete, I made the comment that I would like to see a commissioner be, you know, sit in on these, at least if there was a standing committee, kind of as a commissioner assignment. And have a commissioner at the committee, and Steve thought maybe rotating commissioners through that task. But I think that's very useful to have a commissioner to kind of bring through the full sense of the advisory board's deliberations back to the commission, because otherwise it gets boiled down.
I know I've actually voiced that too, Bill. Let's see. So staff, is there a reason why we don't put commissioners like on ad hoc committees for leasing or rates or something? There's things like I've heard staff say not a good idea, or is a good idea, don't care.
We'll let Eric weigh in also, but I think it has some issues with it, depending on the topic. You know, if it's a controversial topic that the commissioners are going to have to vote on at some point, their participation in that committee could be a little dicey.
Yeah.
I've worked on a number of advisory committees in the past where elected officials were typically present as observers and not participants.
Yes.
And that worked even in the development of the port's strategic plan back in 2009 and 10. I recall one or more commissioners often being present at committee meetings.
Yeah, I think that that's an appropriate role for a commissioner at those meetings, is to be there as an observer, not as an active participant.
Well, actually, they're both more than just observer. They're also there to provide context to the committee as to how this stuff works within the board. And I think that's a really important thing. I remember Dave was at the strategic planning thing a lot, and we asked Dave several questions about, well, how did that work, Dave Thompson?
Oh, right.
And how would that work in the board? And he was basically really good, just sitting there listening, but he was always really helpful when we had questions.
And it was really useful in that the commission, by the time the committee's recommendations came before the commission was aware of and understood kind of the whys and the wherefores when it came to them. So I think certainly, you know, having commissioners present at meetings can be very useful.
Okay.
So I think that we need to really keep in mind, though, that one of the reasons, one of the stated reasons for having a committee is for transparency and also to solve problems. But I think that we need to not, I think we keep thinking, or at least we've been talking here recently about having all these stakeholders and interested parties involved. But I think it's important to understand that we really need to have some people from the community. I know that we had David Hero was just a at-large person from District 1, and he was really important. He was active in the discussions and offered a perspective that a lot of the people that were too close to this topic really couldn't see. And I think it's important to make sure that we have representation like that.
Yeah. Standing committees are better at the broad representation. The ad hoc committees are better at solving the expertise specific issues. So I think we need a mix of both in some way to architect that so that those things kind of flow together.
I think with the concern I heard from staff, and I think it's a valid concern, and I've heard it from other municipalities as well, that and actually Liz Koenig, I don't know if Liz is there today or not, but she has addressed this as well, and that is that, you know, committees, a standing committee can be a time suck, a huge time suck on staff, and I think we all agree we're thin on staff. We've got a huge workload scheduled out as far as things we're trying to accomplish, and so we really need to balance what we're doing with a committee in terms of maintaining that transparency, which is very valid, with moving forward with the business of the port. And my only caution as we move forward is just to be really specific with the tasking of the committee that, one, you know, there really isn't any decision-making power is vested to the committee. That still rests with the staff and commission in terms of what we're doing, advisory only, and two, that the scheduling of the standing committee is really set up in a way that allows us to keep going and doesn't overburden the staff with trying to deal with the standing committee like three times a month or whatever it is that happens. Maybe it's once a month, maybe it's once a quarter, maybe it's whenever we have tasks that come before us that we need to have that advisory information.
Yeah.
So Jim, my only concern is that we're just really specific in how we task this committee.
Yeah. Jim came up with the suggestion that we could have an outside facilitator be essentially record keeper and do some of the kind of housekeeping mm-hmm. things that staff would ordinarily be tasked with. Relieve the staff of some of that burden and get us an extra hand for a modest cost.
You know what I think might be a useful tactic right now, if we're sitting here debating standing committee versus ad hoc committee, and but we really haven't identified what it is we want to solve yet. So I think that might be a useful thing would be to figure out what tasks we have in the immediate offing that need this work, and figure out if that task would be more suitable to an ad hoc committee or a standing committee, and figure out, you know, what timeline we have. For example, I just went through, I know that one of the things we've been talking about is updating the comprehensive scheme. I have my comprehensive scheme here that I went through and made a bunch of notes in and pulled the pages down, and it really didn't take that long. I think we could knock that out pretty quickly and then have a meeting and let, you know, let the whole public weigh in. But then there's other things that I think really need a committee to deal with, like the strategic plan update and the IDD versus that LED. That's a big one that I think that would be perfectly suited. I think it's just ideally suited for that. But we gotta figure out when we want to address these and what would be the best way of doing it, you know, ad hoc or standing, and just kind of prioritize what we need to have done.
Hopefully, as things go on, you know, there'll be more things that have not been dreamed up in our philosophy for these folks to do. You know, one of the big things that's a standing concern is a broader public input and a broader public awareness of how the port operates. That seems to be the thing that everybody points to and says, you know, that's why we don't want to give you more money, because we don't know what you're doing. You know, there's lots of ways for them to solve that for themselves, but somehow we need to come up with some sort of a reasonable accommodation to that perspective.
Yeah, well, it seems like what precipitated this whole discussion was when we had the IDD and the versus the what I would prefer, the live lift. And so I think that's kind of like, to me anyway, that's the biggest problem that we're wanting to have this standing committee for. Some of the things that came up was in this discussion was, well, we don't have, you know, I went back and I looked at our comprehensive scheme and saw that it hadn't been updated for a long time. So getting that kind of stuff. Going back and looking at that, realize that they had a point, you know, that we haven't been taking a look at that, and that it would be useful from the public's perspective. When they're trying to look at it, they're not going to want to go through all of the documents that together make up a compendium that equals our comprehensive scheme. They want to see a comprehensive scheme, they look at it and say, oh, okay, well, I see that. So that would be a useful thing to go ahead and update. And it's so cut and dried, it's not like it's open to a lot of interpretation. We have so many things that need to get done and so much money to do it with, that's a very simple, straightforward thing to do, and then update the capital plan. And then we've got a couple of the big things that were concerns for the stumbling blocks of the IDD addressed, and then we can actually make the committee be focused on the big picture, which is the IDD. Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think the comprehensive scheme, I don't know, is it late? It's not really late, right? It's just
end of the year.
Yeah, it's not due yet.
Mm-hmm.
It is a compendium of things that you know, it's a very aspirational document. It's got like expanding the marina things that we'll never do in it. And you know, the extent that people say, well, you haven't updated your comprehensive scheme, you know, you don't know what you're going to spend the money on. You know, that is a kind of a made up excuse for, you know, and I don't buy it.
I do, and I'll tell you why. It's because it's a law that our comprehensive scheme consists of all the documents that we passed in the interim that make up the comprehensive scheme.
Yeah.
Well, how is anybody in the public going to be able to go back and look up all those documents that we don't have, you know, listed or cataloged or anything, and this is a part of the comprehensive scheme? We have this document here called the Comprehensive Scheme of Improvements that we approve every year because we have to for budgetary reasons, but we're approving every year this wild idea that we're going to make a marina go out into the ocean. Well, we're not going to do that. Let's just go ahead and make this be a really simple thing that says it distills where we're thinking of our money going right now, what are the most important projects we have, and then people can look at the.
I mean, I got it, I mean, that's a half an inch of paper you've got there that ought to be like four pages tops. It ought to just reference other documents and say, if you want to know about, here's all the things that we have. We have a budget, we have a list of projects, we have a list of assets, we have, and there are other documents that are constituents of the comprehensive scheme. All those documents rolled up are the comprehensive scheme. There's no point in having a budget and then bringing the budget into the comprehensive scheme and having a list of projects and bringing the list of projects into the comprehensive scheme. It just means that those things will never sync. So I'm just saying, that the comprehensive scheme of harbor improvements really needs to be an index to other documents rather than, you know, everything rolled up into one place.
Well, that'd be fine, then we can do that. I went ahead and did this, so we can do an index. I don't care which way it's done.
And then every time you have a new budget, we've updated the comprehensive scheme. We have to vote to say, you know, we're not going to change the index this year. We're not going to add things to the index or take things away from the index. But all those documents are you know, newly in the scheme as they're updated.
But right now we have that.
We don't have that.
So,
but we're not out of compliance with.
We're not out of compliance. What I'm saying is,
hey guys.
Yeah.
Let's go back to advisory committee.
Okay.
Right.
So one of the things that I think we should talk about is if you have an advisory committee, and let's say it's an ad hoc committee, I'll just throw that out, or a hybrid, like. Comp scheme is a way to go, Steve. I would say parking is actually more specific and might be done quicker. I don't know how immediate the parking issue is, how quick we want to solve it as a port. But again, thinking of the hybrid idea, if you had like a Susan Whitmire, Ernie Baird, Pete Langley, and then you brought in, you know, three other people who are more port specific to the actual needs of what this parking policy is going to look like a fisherman that uses the ramp type thing. The problem that I'm seeing or that I want to talk about is how the sequencing of what the committee's working on. So the comp scheme is one and parking is another. And do we do that consecutively or sequentially? And I would caution that you wouldn't want to do it concurrent because then you end up with a lot of meeting time as far as trying to solve two issues at once. And so I think there should be some discussion about, all right, advisory committee, you're tasked with dealing with parking, and then after that you're tasked with dealing with comp scheme, and then after that you're tasked with the next issue versus trying to do them both at the same time. So what do you guys think on that?
Yeah, that's what I thought when I suggested that perhaps we need to get our tasks that we want to have sent out to a committee listed and prioritized. And that's how we kind of got off on the thing that I think comp scheme is a really simple thing that could be done in it without even any input from an advisory group at all. But then we have big things, you know, like we talked about, parking and the IED and that kind of thing that really do warrant having a committee. So I think that should probably be our next focus is listing things that we need, that we want and think would be useful for a committee and prioritizing them.
I'm kind of a multitasking person, so I mean, I see the risk in saying, well, we're only going to do one thing at a time until it's done, then we're going to do the next thing. It's kind of like, you know, beads on a string. At some point, you know, you're going to have a parking committee while you're deciding some other thing. I think it'd be great to you know, only do one thing at a time and you know, be casual about it, but life is short. We have things that need to be done, and sometimes they're going to overlap.
You're not going to like this, Bill, but the multitasking thing, like, the audiovisual system we want for the commission building is critical, and we're still waiting for it. So,
yeah, me too.
Yeah, exactly. And so I would venture to say, let's do one thing well at a time than trying to do a bunch of things not so well.
Yeah, I would suggest the first thing we need to do well is to make a list and prioritize it. And then we can find one and attack it immediately. And I think that whatever we find will inform us as to what sort of a committee we need. And I'm kind of thinking that if we do a list of things, we may end up finding that ad hoc committees are more flexible and easily convened and get to the point, get it done quicker.
I think we just want to make sure that the committee's task is not to make more work for staff. And when you talk to the PUD staff, that is it. I mean, PUD is a model in what they do. When you talk to staff, they say, yeah, the committee is just giving you 10 more jobs to do. Mm-hmm. So we need to make sure that we manage that expectation too.
And yet at the same time, create a pipeline so the public feels like they have a great conduit into staff and commission as far as their opinion of a certain issue.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough goal. I mean, it's worth the discussion that we're having to get it right.
So staff is kind of wanting direction on, do you want us to move forward on creating documents for consideration? Are we not there yet? I think Steve's idea of doing a list of things that we could use an advisory committee for would be a great first step for the next meeting. Do we agree on that?
Yep.
Of course I said it. Was that a nod, yes or no, Bill?
That's a yeah. I mean,
okay.
I guess that was fine. What staff wants to know is this something we want to create in the next 30 days, or is this something that we want to make sure we get right and could take 4 months?
Somewhere in between there is a happy medium. I don't think that it's an absolute compulsion to have it done in the next 30 days. I'd rather take some time and do it right, but I don't want to go into the dark of this winter without something going.
Well, now we're just talking about lists. I think that can be done in 30
days. Oh, yeah, no, I'm talking about the committee, figuring out what we're going to do and actually have a committee in place.
No, I think that the list will inform the committee type, and I think that after we get that list, a better discussion might ensue, and then we can get a better list.
If we had
to do an ad hoc, it would be quick. If we had to do a standing, it would be long, so I think that.
So we've got another, I want to try and get this closed out by 11 so that people have time for lunch. Do we have enough time in the next 32 minutes to make a list? And we've got parking, we've got citizen, I don't know what you want to call it, civil communication, I don't know, what do you want to call the
I'm not sure
taking input and advice about how to deal with the public. I mean, that's
awareness.
Yeah.
Citizens Advisory Board, call it a CAB.
Yeah.
So
I know, but I mean, is that a task for the CAB?
It is a task, yeah. So we put two workshops into it, and we're hoping to come around third base here.
I mean, I think useful, rate studies are always useful. And as long as we can get a committee to work on that, I think that's important to work on, because we're going to be coming into a rate season, so what we're going to do. Comp scheme, IDD versus levy lid lift, a public relations, public awareness committee to tell us how we can do better at communicating to the public. So those are, that's a start.
Well, parking is another one too.
Parking's definitely on there.
Do
we want parking on there? Is parking an issue?
Yeah, parking is an issue.
Yeah.
It really is.
It doesn't need to be a standing committee, but it's a problem that needs to be solved and needs input. And I think that's what Steve was after, is a list of, you know, kind of the immediate, you know, first task and then prioritize those somehow. Not to put this word in Steve's mouth. that's essentially it.
I think you could go right into parking, do the, bring in a couple people to come alongside the leasing committee group and take on parking.
Yeah, so that would be then an ad hoc committee, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because it'd be the leasing group plus a couple of parking folks. We probably want to get a representative from downtown that's near Main Street for Point Hudson issues, and then get one from like the fisherman or somebody for here for, you know, other ones. Yeah, so in other words, I think that we're kind of tending to go toward ad hoc committees, because if we had that, I think the one thing that might warrant a standing committee would be the big continual perpetual funding issue, IDD versus lib. And I think that's something that, once that question is determined, which one is going to be pursued, then the committee would, you would have their hands full trying to go ahead and get the public. Oh, wait a minute, can that be a committee? That can't be a port sanctioned thing if we're going to do a...
Right. Can't talk about the IDD or lib.
It can't be a political committee.
But we could have the committee determine which method to use and then start getting the stakeholders that are affected.
You might want to ask Frank about that and just make sure we don't cross that line.
Yeah. Because you don't want to have staff time involved or you know, port funding or anything for a committee that has a political agenda. It just...
So one of the things that Commissioner Putney talks about as part of his campaign when he was elected was different business types. And maybe we could have a committee to talk about what business types the port should get involved in to expand
its economic development. Committee.
That's a very good one, yeah.
I mean, agriculture and all those other segments of the, that we've always said, yeah, we want to do that, but never gotten around to it in the last, 70 odd years.
Well, and then there's quilting.
Is quilting the whole committee all by itself?
Well, yeah. Well, I think that, it warrants a discussion from, because there's a lot going on down there that we need to deal with. I mean, and we're just, unfortunately, I've been wanting to have a new boat ramp down there ever since I've been a commissioner, and that's almost 8 years now.
To change it from Tucker boat ramp
from that. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's an important thing. It just kind of seems getting pushed outside, and so we had a discussion on that.
Well, it might help with communication to the Quill Seam residents of why we're not doing something or why we can't do something and what we can do. I mean, that'll...
Yeah. And I love the linger longer. Group, the advisory committee, but it has to be broader than that.
Yeah.
It has to address more of the quilting community than those few folks. Again, those are really like a stakeholder group as opposed to a broader community group.
Well, there too, we need to have representation from not only the quilting area, but taxpayers at large, And people like maybe the Brothertons or Linda Herzog or something like that. It's not in the longer group. So of those things, which would be the one that we could tackle first?
Parking.
Okay.
I mean, it's one that staff has already fired up to start. Mm-hmm. We just need commission direction to say let's do it.
Okay.
Well, we can't come to any decisions, but have we kind of isolated the fact that we could get started. First off, do we need any more input on topics? Because the one that was really near and dear to my heart, I've totally forgotten about with all the fresh, and that's the economic development and agriculture. So I wonder if there's other ones out there that we've forgotten about because I wasn't prepared to do this.
Well, the economic development one is going to take a long time, and the committee could help us in identifying grant opportunities for things to pursue other ventures. So I think that could be a very good second one that would take the broader committee, community involved.
Now, was that one then more of a standing committee, do you think?
Probably. It's a core responsibility.
Yeah. I would think that may.
So I think that's the.
Go ahead.
That's kind of the essence of the idea of, you know, like parking being a core group with a couple of stakeholders, and then the next task of maybe economic development being that same core group with a couple of extra community people, like agricultural people or whatever, that could jump in as well. Quilting, drop in somebody from Quilting. Their whole county perspective of economic development.
Excuse me.
And we had an item on some agenda somewhere at some time to talk about broadband. So probably not adding broadband to this list at this time is the right thing to do. But at the time the commission decides how and if we wanted to be involved in broadband, that might be another subgroup.
Yeah, I can see that one for perhaps later. Yeah,
it might be good too at some point. I mean, because there's all kind of brainstorming some really good ideas to get some kind of timeline together of what's realistic for each topic and whether any can overlap
so
or
like
happen at the same time.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, just so, you know, I mean, it's really exciting to talk about what we can do, but it can't be done by December, right? So just having a realistic.
And we could also solicit ideas from the public, you know, what they think.
George, what do you think?
I'm listening.
Okay, as a committee. Pam, anything on your mind?
Jetty.
I'm not getting much response.
Jetty, in regards to what? Like the design or?
No, just
getting it done.
Make it, yeah.
Yeah, because I think we're working on that. I mean, I don't see that we're stalling that. It's slow, like everything, but I think it's slow going.
And Historic Preservation Committee.
Well, I mean, I think you're onto something. There are a couple of things, especially if we don't have any kind of tax relief, that we're going to have to deal with. And one is Point Hudson overall. What are we going to do with Point Hudson? Mm-hmm. And the second is, we had talked about possibly starting to sell buildings, keeping land leases, being a landlord. But do we really want to be maintaining these aging buildings? Mm-hmm. So that could be a committee all in itself that could get some real estate people together to really determine how that goes forward.
Well, I've been listening to the, I don't know if it's a committee or not, but the stakeholder versus citizen discussion. And the immediate question that comes to my mind is, how do we make more citizens become stakeholders? How can we increase public participation in the board? There's got to be ways to do that.
Yeah, no,
Do you have any suggestions?
Well, and it's just, you know, it's not something we can change, but look what the farmer's market does to downtown, uptown, every Saturday, most of the year. What can we do down here to bring the general, not boat owners, not marine trades, but the average citizen, the non-stakeholder, bring them down here and get them to become stakeholders? And I think if we can figure out a way to do that, and this might be a committee, then we would have nothing but benefit to the board.
Kind of like the music on the docks, but it's not sponsored by us.
Well, but that's a problem. You got it sponsored.
Yeah.
You don't get anything for free.
Yeah.
So more
I mean, as far as effort.
More, I mean, the intersection that we generally have with the general public are the more recreational sorts of things, like the boat ramp. You know, when I was running in Bay, and there were the first time, and there was a big battle about, you know, should we
increase the size of the boat ramp. You know, for me, it's, there's just a hell of a lot of trailable boats around Jefferson County, and it seemed like the thing that you know, more taxpayers would be excited about having more access to the water than anything else the port does. I mean, that's the kind of, you know, get your juices flowing kind of thing. I mean, the airport days thing was a great thing until it was just not something that the pilot association could put on anymore. But after the last one of those, you know, I got calls for years after that about when airport days was again, and because there was a lot of interest in you know, those kinds of like PR generating events might be something that we just say, well, this is something that we need to do to get more people familiar with what the port does and you know, and get them more on board. So
I think we've already generated quite a list, but why don't we take the next week or so, and any ideas you might have, just shoot me an email. We'll compile that list for the next meeting and then go through a prioritization process.
And I guess I invite the public to do the same.
Invite the public to do the same.
It's kind of about to, it's a good comment from the audience there. I think with committees, we all need to remember our cell phone numbers are on our business cards. We hold meetings twice a month. The doors to the admin office are always open as far as the public coming in to present opinions on things. So we are definitely open to the public, to input to the court. And I think the value of committees in terms of being fairly specific on a specific task like parking and focusing on that is important, but also I think we have to temper that with the fact that we do provide a lot, like the workshop that we're in right now, we do provide a lot of opportunity for the public to input to the port if they feel it's necessary. And so I would just throw that out as a perspective in adding to the conversation about committees.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think that it's not that we're a closed organization. I mean, we're fairly scrupulous about you know, being open and being available. And it's really about more about finding ways to encourage the public to find out more about the port. I mean, it's just all the information is out there. It's all public record. It's all public meetings. I'm kind of flummoxed by the whole, you know, we don't know what the port is doing, and we don't know, and you know, so we can't trust you, kind of thing. Just, you know, I don't know what to do with that. You know, more than what we do. And maybe some of the kind of more recreational kind of meet the port on the port's turf kind of thing, open for the general public might be more attractive and get a better response.
You know, it's real interesting. The city has the Mountain View Commons that supports all those nonprofits. We don't really have a Mountain View Commons, but I was at a fishing club meeting last night, and it was our annual crab feed, and bunch of guys in the fishing club like to go out crabbing because it's fun to do and you get a lot of crabs, and pretty soon your neighbors start going, oh, bring me our crabs. But one time we had an incident where we couldn't get a venue. I can't remember what happened. The marina room was full or something. And so we ended up having the crab feed in the parking lot of the salmon club. And it was, you know, right out in the open, and we had all these crabs, and these people were wandering around from downtown, and they came and said, what you doing? You want a piece of crab? And they couldn't believe that we were offering them crab for free. And it was just a potluck, but it was pretty soon it was just a whole bunch of people all
getting the soup and crystals.
And so if we were to do something like, you know, supply a spot for a craft beer. I'm sure there's a fishing club or you know, we'd be able to do something like that. And I'm sure there's other things that could happen that could be similar to that. I mean, this is just one that pops into my head, because last night we were trying to figure out what to do about, because last night was kind of a slow turnout, which was kind of surprising for us. I thought, well, we need to get some more buzz around. But that's the kind of thing I think you're talking about. And that, like, if we thought a little bit more about it, we could probably do more things like that. Like, I'm sure the Marine Trades has a Earth Day celebration every now and then, something that they could open the public to. Or the, I really find the Shipwrights Co-op barbecue, you know, it's half the town comes out to that. Those kinds of things could be enhanced or maybe have more of them like it or something like that.
An event venue.
Yeah, an event committee.
Yeah.
Good idea.
All right. Anything else?
I think that may be it. If Pete, you have anything else you want to?
No, I'm good.
Okay, Steve?
I'm done.
Okay, well, thank you all for your attendance. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it, and your input is always appreciated. So, see you at 1. So choose.